When we were with the Lennons in 1972 and they had my realist article, a section of that article had to do with American assassins as mutations, as a creation of our espionage establishment being subject to mind control and the role of the news media in perpetuating the lies about these assassins. And part of that article had to do with the story, the lie about Lee Harvey Oswald being, in quotes, the lone assassin. And I said, our American assassins hired as decoys are either killed or isolated in their cages. The lone assassin becomes an animal to be dissected by Pentagon social scientists and psychiatrists. And then the media, the puppet media, and other experts pick up the lingo and pass along disinformation as facts. And while this human being is turned into a patsy, monitored every second and isolated until his death, covert agents manufacture what are supposed to have been his motives for becoming the assassin. The fictitious personality should be studied and is supposed to be the model of future assassins. And I mentioned then that Sirhan, Charles Manson, John Fraser, and others, if they were free to talk, would shake American justice and conspiratorial processes to their very roots. And I went on the domino theory that if you say that Lee Harvey Oswald was a loner or a misfit or rejected or unknown or wanted a place in history, then you could carry this same story on to the killing of Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King or the murder at Chappaquiddick or the shooting of George Wallace in Maryland. And I mentioned that the physical evidence to solve these crimes is put aside, criminology is put aside, and out comes the profile of the assassination that is a total diversion from the facts. And in the next few weeks, I'm going to outline ways that we can go into who killed John Lennon. One of the chances or flukes of history is that David Mark Chapman had offices across the street from the Scientologists in Hawaii. The Scientologists are the most fervent investigators. They made the original connections of J. Edgar Hoover to Interpol, to the Nazis, and have published many articles on mind control. And if this David Mark Chapman was at a mental hospital in Hawaii, where Edmund Kemper and various other California assassins were sent and turned into killers, they will know it. They will trace him out. And while the death of John Lennon has only been less than 1 week, be sure that the Scientologists who knew this character on the island will go to every length they can to find out who paid his way to Lebanon, who paid his way to Southeast Asia, what organization he worked for, how he got to Switzerland, how he got in the army camp in Arkansas with the Vietnamese. And they'll trace him, but they're right in Hawaii and they knew him. And as a fluke of history, it may be that they will help put in the missing pieces of this terrible murder. The Los Angeles Times and all the major newspapers run disgusting stories after these assassinations. And also in the next few weeks, I'll read you the headlines of some of the other political assassinations and then update you what was really true, what the real truth was, and how the media is used to brainwash everybody and put them to sleep and at rest, that there is no violence per se in this country. These are just loners out wanting to identify with their victims. The Los Angeles Times had a story, John Lennon's death didn't fit the pattern. They go into Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Keith Moon, John Bonham, but Robert Hilburn, who said Lennon's death did not fit the pattern. What was the pattern? Overdose of drugs, car accidents, plane crashes. What was the pattern? It may not have fit the pattern of Lenny Bruce being overdosed because he was very political, talking about the Kennedy assassination, or Dr. Kruger, the hypnotist, giving Freddie Prinze his gun and being with him, telling him to go home when he's allegedly depressed, handing him the gun, and Freddie Prinze is home playing the Zapruder films of the killing of John Kennedy and about to go to Florida to find out who killed Kennedy. It didn't fit the pattern of Otis Redding or Jim Croce and the Leonard Skinner, the plane crashes, or Buddy Holly, but it fit a pattern. And the Los Angeles Times doesn't go into that. John Lennon's murder fit a pattern of Abraham Lincoln, who was against slavery, or Mahatma Gandhi, who was against material possessions that Lennon sings about in Imagine, and chasing imperialism out of India and escorting the British to the edge of the water and telling them to scram. It fit the pattern of John Kennedy gunned down in Dealey Plaza. It certainly fit the pattern of Malcolm X gunned down in New York City with the Red Squad and Tony Laskowitz and all the Watergate White House team behind that murder. It fit the Martin Luther King assassination on the balcony, gunned down in cold blood, or the Robert Kennedy murder in the Ambassador Hotel, or Representative Leo Ryan's murder down in Jonestown. Each one of these people was trying to make the world safer against slavery, against colonialism, for civil rights, against the nuclear test ban treaty, against organized crime, for prison reform. Every one of these was a social activist, and you certainly have to know if you've played Lennon songs or known John Lennon, particularly even after the Beatles group broke up, the social activism and the concern, and the Beatles themselves breaking all the establishment rules, John Lennon's anti-establishment attitude. He did all the wrong things and succeeded. In this country, you're supposed to go to Groton, you're supposed to go to Harvard and Yale and Princeton and wear pointy black shoes with three-button or two-button coats and look and talk a certain way and get on Meet the Press and talk about indexes and price indexes and talk about the country in terms that nobody understands. The Los Angeles Times, for once, rock wasn't to blame. John Lennon's death didn't fit the pattern. I repeat, it fit the pattern perfectly for what he believed in, and that's why people are so sad this week and meeting all over the world and in genuine grief, the same grief they felt when John Kennedy was murdered. They didn't cry for the flesh they lost. They cried for the world they face without them. They realized they had a friend, and the friend is gone, and we sit back and expect political leaders to do it for us, to do things for us. The leaders can't do it alone, and certainly when they're up front, they're gunned down. So while he didn't fit the pattern of the rock music, he fit the pattern of people who wanted change in the world, as I listed them to you, and that's just a few names. There's many, many more. Doug Hammarskjöld and Adlai Stevenson, and there were plane crashes and people falling out of windows, but I'm talking about men that were gunned down in public in front of the people that loved them and came to admire them. And his murder fit that pattern. Next week, I'm not going into the details now. I'm going to do a resume of another article. It's from the Chicago Tribune this week. It's another BS newsprint cover-up story. The Four Faces of Lennon's Killer, a bizarre psychiatric portrait. Well, where did James Younger come across it within 6 days? How does he know about the tormented brain of Mark David Chapman? This is, I've seen this crap for so long, I want to puke. But even he has to ask questions when he doesn't have the answers, and it's the questions he asks that will give us the clue to find out what went behind this murder. One interesting thing, he says that Mark David Chapman was itching to wander, so he got a job as a YMCA student working in Beirut, Lebanon. The man that wrote The Exorcist, his name was Blakey or Blady. I was looking for that book tonight. I couldn't find it on my shelf. He was from the United States military, head of military intelligence, and worked in Beirut, Lebanon, and the CIA had a mind control center there. So itching to wander at age 20 doesn't explain what Mark David Chapman was doing, but I would venture to say that after he left Fort Worth and after he went to Florida, and then went to Georgia and Tennessee, I would venture to say that his real initiation into mind control began in Beirut, Lebanon. I'm saying that this is only 6 days since John Lennon was murdered, but I'll give you a little clue where to look for the mind control. That's where the personality began to change of this man who they said identified with Lennon but worked strictly with the Jesus freaks, the people that were against the Beatles, against the Lennons, that resented the remarks John Lennon had made. I was upset about the Lennon shooting on Tuesday morning. I came into KLRB just to walk around and mainly to get out of the house because the phone had been ringing since 11 o'clock at night. And by 3 in the morning, I fell asleep and it started. And I came into KLRB. And one of the people that works here that I've known over the years right away said to me, "You know, it was one lone person." Well, I would accept the fact that one lone person killed John Lennon after I investigate the facts. But there's something I don't understand, and that is how people can solve a crime in 12 hours. They must know a lot more than I know, but they don't have the library I have. I have many, many books on Operation Mind Control, the CIA involvement in mind control, the CIA telling people to kill themselves, the control of Candy Jones, how she came to California and took on two personalities, how she was told to murder herself in Paradise Island. They say this boy shot John Lennon because he was suicidal. The CIA trains you to be suicidal. You can be perfectly normal until they get their hands on you, and then they teach you how to be suicidal. You don't shoot John Lennon because you're suicidal, and you don't travel across continents, go to New York and staying at $81 room hotels and back to Hawaii and back to New York. And the thing that I really get upset about, it doesn't really matter. I'm going to do my work no matter what, and there's some people that know what's going on in the world, and there's some that never will. But it just really blows my mind that 13 hours after somebody as irreverent, anti-establishment, anti-war as John Lennon was, can be gunned down, and the willingness of people to accept the fact that the case is solved in 12 hours. It happens over and over again. I don't understand it. At least study how this fellow got to London, how he got to Southeast Asia, what he was doing in Hawaii. Even this great Chicago Tribune article doesn't explain. They said they don't know how he got to Hawaii. Who met him there? What was his wife doing there? Is she an agent? All these questions beg to be answered over and over and over again. And it isn't simple. There are not simple answers. And the fact that the world is grieving for John Lennon so badly means that he touched us. And if he touched us that badly, who else was he touching? Whose shoes was he stepping on? Because not everyone sees the world as you see it, or maybe Brussels sees it. A lot of people see it a different way. I saw Today's show this week, and a man wrote a book on atomic warfare. Tom Brokaw was interviewing him, and he explained that atomic warfare is going to be a fact in the Reagan administration, and that it doesn't matter if North America is wiped out because South America will continue to exist without the radiation. And then Tom Brokaw says, well, that isn't very nice, and suggests now we'll turn back to Jane Pauley, and today we're going to review Popeye, and the woman who plays the part of Olive Oil is on. Cut to the next segment of the news. Wouldn't you just jump out of your chair if you were Tom Brokaw and say, North America isn't going to survive? I mean, you telling me it's not important? Adolf Hitler said in his books, let's take all of South America or Africa and Middle East because North America is run by the Jews and liberals and they don't count. And years later, here's a man writing about atomic warfare, and we're on the brink of atomic warfare the morning after John Lennon is murdered. This dog is talking about the North American continent accepting the fact of radiation and being a plausible thing. When the elections were going on and the debates were going on, Jimmy Carter said and implied Reagan would get us into a war. And Reagan said, I'm highly incensed. This is the most terrible thing you've ever said. And here is a man in the Reagan camp outright saying it up front as if it's a fait accompli. Would John Lennon have stood for that? Would he have allowed his silence after those 5 years of tending a little boy, a child, and an 18-year-old, 17-year-old son? What forces would get together to stop World War III? It wasn't just what John Lennon or the Beatles did that was a threat to this government going into these treacherous times. It's their potential that had to be wiped out. It isn't just what they said about peace and love and brotherhood in the past. It's all there. That's all there for us, and people all over the world have mourned and will continue to mourn. The point was that he was emerging, and we don't know what he would do. Maybe he'd continue buying 4 limousines, maybe 8. Maybe he has the Vanderbilt estate in Florida. Maybe he'd buy the Whitney. Maybe he wants all their estates and castles. Maybe he wouldn't do anything. Maybe they continue to collect fur coats. I don't know what they would do. But if there was a war and he didn't want his boy to be bombed out or his family or the human race bombed out, all they'd have to do, the 4 Beatles, is get on the phone and have a concert, and people's awareness would be put together. So the gangland slaying of this man was to wipe out his potential, and that's important. And as Carl Sandburg said, learn in silence and learn facts. And as he was emerging, he spent 5 years, and Lennon, you know, learned a lot in those 5 years. The Bible is an interesting book, and when you read the beginning of it, you learn about the Garden of Eden. And don't forget the forbidden fruit. I mentioned this many times on broadcast. The forbidden fruit was not nudity or screwing around. It was knowledge. Be careful of knowledge, because knowledge will kill you. And in these terrible times, the smart ones get off, because they're the ones that have put it together. So that the tree of the Garden of Eden was knowing the difference between good and evil. The tree, the knowledge of good of evil, thou shalt not eat it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. I wonder sometimes if this wasn't written to keep people from thinking, to whoever wrote these sayings in the Bible, to keep you under their control. This was a form of mind control of its own, to make you fearful to learn. Because once you learn, you can do things for yourself. You have life pretty much under control. That's one of the things the Beatles and the 60s taught me. I had a large home, a lot of help, as I say, a big family, and depended on a lot of people for ideas, although I was learning all the time. And after Kennedy was killed, I began to figure out things myself. I read contradictions in what the newspapers said, as against what the Warren Commission hearings published under sworn testimony of witnesses. I began to learn I didn't have to dress a certain way. You didn't have to get out certain kinds of shoes in the winter and put them away in the spring. Your spectator pumps, your white shoes, your matching purses, red purse with red shoes, a blue purse. I got rid of all the things I didn't need in the 60s, and I was very moved by the 60s. Even though I was 40 at the time, I got rid of the high heels and the girls and the stocking and the jewelry and the beauty parlors and all the accoutrements and all the junk, and began to make my own things or my own gifts and my own entertaining in my own way, and realized that there were layers of lies that they put on you. It sells good. It's great, Madison Avenue, but you don't have to keep buying hose that run and all that crap and coats that match and accessories that match. It was a period when the Beatles came with their clothes and their joie de vivre that I enjoyed. I wasn't brought up in a strict home, but it was fairly conservative home, freer than most, actually. But there was a spirit, and of course I took the kids to see the movies, particularly Diane. She was my youngest. The others could go off the movies on their own, so we saw Help 20 times and Hard Day's Night 20 times, and she dressed like Ringo. There was a scene with a lot of red in it, so she had to have red shoes and red socks and red shirt. And one day I came home and her ponytails were cut off, her pigtails, because she wanted to be like the Beatles. She had long, pretty hair, but she wanted to be like Ringo. And we lost a Ringo. She used to call him Yingo up at Saddle Mountain Ranch up here. And he was a little rubber Yingo that used to move around. And she lost him in a sandbox, and we had to go back and weeks later go through all the sand and find Ringo. And we had the music. We had the music of all those artists I mentioned, and went to see Bob Dylan up in San Jose. So personally, it made a big change in my life, in who I began to see, how I began to think, how I could feel or express myself through the music of the time. And along with the research that I was doing on the political assassinations, I had this other part of me that was interested always in the music of the times. And personally, it was really hard. It was hard to remember how much they touched me until this week, and these songs would come on, and each song would remind me personally of something I was doing at the time it came out. Let It Be was written May the 8th, 1970, on the birthday of one of my sons. I remember where I was when I heard Hey Jude. I was coming up, we were camping at Big Sur, and I was up near Rio Road up here in Carmel when I heard Hey Jude the first time. And I associate so many of their songs. I have a few favorites, but it was an era, and it didn't end. It was continuous. John, when he took his years out, was still, there was enough good stuff to listen to. He didn't have to keep pumping music while he was doing his thing. The real tragedy, one of the real tragedies, is that they didn't know the political animal. They were busy pulling back and retrenching and analyzing themselves, and as I say, not simultaneously knowing politics. In the new Playboy article that came out January 1981, the one that's on the stands now, Yoko and John have an interview, and Yoko Ono said, "The law is not a mystery to me anymore. Politicians are not a mystery to me. I'm not scared of all that establishment anymore." You wouldn't go in a nest of rattlesnakes and say that. You wouldn't go into a place where wild lions are. And just because John Mitchell went to jail and came out, he didn't soften his hatred of them or their potential, or Strom Thurmond or Richard Nixon or Kissinger or Brzezinski or the rednecks or the Jesus freaks who didn't like that saying. I knew immediately that this guy was influenced by that remark of Jesus. And sure enough, it turned out he carried that around with him. I was told, well, that was so long ago, you wouldn't kill Lenin for that. That's what somebody told me this week. I said, oh, no, you get somebody who makes a remark like that way back in the 60s or early 70s. This was in the 60s. And it would trigger a mind control program for somebody who wanted to get rid of them if they ever emerged. And emerging, they were. So this has been a very sad week. Yoko and John's innocence was to say the politicians are not a mystery. I'm not scared of the establishment anymore. And if there's one thing I leave with you this evening, is that as long as these killings are unsolved, the politicians are a mystery to you and me. As long as they get away with it, they are a mystery. You can't sit back and say a Beatles fan killed a Beatle. You can't say Lee Harvey Oswald wanted a place in history, so he killed John Kennedy. It wasn't that way at all. He was working with George de Morenschild, a known war criminal, a Nazi during World War II. He had high contacts in the military establishment. These are not loners. They're well-financed. They're well-traveled. They're well-placed. And they know how to hurt us. And as long as their mentality exists, they'll continue to hurt us. And that is the tragedy. Well, I'm going to close this evening with a song I want them to play here from John Lennon's Merry Xmas, Merry Christmas, The War is Over. And next week we'll do part two on the cold-blooded murder of John Lennon.
Happy Christmas, Kyoko.
Happy Christmas, Julie.
So this is Christmas. What have you done? Another year over, and you won't just be gone. And so this is Christmas. I hope you had fun. The near and the dear ones.
has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.